Let's continue with our example, and our example of the basic access mode of operation for DCF wireless LAN. We'll finish this example, then explain some aspects or some of the issues in the design of the MAC protocol, and look at some more detailed operation, and also this afternoon we'll talk a little bit about the assignment. Where we got to on this example is about here. I drew it on the board, so you should have that. So we gave the conditions, and we got to a case where client A wanted to transfer data to the access point, and so did client B. Client B had to wait. That is, when client B wanted to transmit, at one stage it sensed that the medium was busy because client A was already transmitting, and therefore client B has to wait until the medium becomes idle. So we say when the client is waiting, it's deferring. It defers its access. So we'll see that come up in some of the slides where it refers to deferral. We defer access until the medium becomes idle. Just some terminology. So the example we're going through is, in fact, I think, very close to this one, but has numbers. So we got to this point at time 1360, where the ACK from the access point, the acknowledgement, had come back to the original client A, the one who had sent the data. So at that point in time, client C still needs to transmit data. At time, what was it, 220, it had data to send, but it had to defer until the medium becomes idle. And now the medium's idle again. That is, no one's transmitting. So client B is back to the original stage. Wait for the diffs, the DCF interframe space, which is 50 microseconds, which would take it to 1410, but let's check that no one else is transmitting in this time. So it must wait for that period, but just we need to make sure that no one else is transmitting. Our condition was that at time 1420, the access point was to send data. Imagine what happened. My laptop sent some data to the access point, and a little bit later, some data via the access point, perhaps to a PC on the LAN, and a little bit later, that PC responds. So some data is going to come from the access point to client A, and that, we said in this scenario, would start at 1420. We had data at time 0, somewhere around here, at time 220 from B, and at time 1420 here, access point has data to send to client A. So access point also goes through the normal procedure. Sense the medium. Is it busy? No, no one's transmitting. Or let's look at client B. From 1360 through to 1410, it was in the diffs period. No one was transmitting. No one's transmitting here or here. So client B completes the diffs time and now moves into the next stage of, okay, choose a random backoff period. So it chooses a random number, again, between 0 and 31 in this scenario because our contention window is 31. And that tells it how many slots it must wait. The random number chosen in this case just is 10. I know it's the same as what A chose, but that's just a coincidence. Okay, so let's say that we must back off, BO is the, I've used its abbreviation, for 10 slots. We chose a random number between 0 and 31, some random between 0. And in this case, the random number I chose, or this computer chose, is 10. No relationship to the 10 that A chose here. Just a coincidence that they're the same value. So 10 slots, each slot is 20 microseconds, so it would have to wait for 200 microseconds, and the medium must be idle for that period for it to transmit the data. So we need to do these things in parallel, because in fact they are happening in parallel at different computers. So at the access point at 1420 starts the diffs period. No one's transmitting through that period of time because the back off here should finish where? If that's 1410, if it's 10 slots, that's 200 microseconds, it should finish at 1610. In the same time, the diffs will finish at 1470. No one was transmitting, so that's successful. And then, same, the access point chooses a random number between 0 and 31 for its back-off period. So during the back-off period, or even during the disk, we can think as the station is counting down. It starts a timer. Here, the timer starts at 50. It must get down to 0. If no one transmits during that period, move to the next stage. Or if the medium is idle throughout that period, move to the next stage. Similar, in the back-off period, choose a random number. That tells you how long you have to wait. 10 times the slot time, or 10 slots. And count down. And often we can think of it as counting down in slots. 10 slots, 9, 8, 7, and so on. Similar here. We waited for the diffs period. Choose a back-off. Now, again, choose a random number. In this case, the access point chooses 3. A random number between 0 and 31. It chose 3 in this case. So it's counting down. At 1470, it starts. 3 slots. 20 microseconds later, 2 slots. 1 slot, 0. So 3 slots would bring us to 1530. In this case, the access point completes its back-off period before client C does. Because client C chose the random value 10, it has to wait 10 slots or 200 microseconds. Even though access points started a little bit later, 10 microseconds in this case, actually 60 microseconds, it started the back-off period 60 microseconds later, because it chose a smaller random number, it will finish the back-off period before client C gets to finish. Client C would finish at 1610, that is, start at 1410 plus 200. The access point finishes its back-off period at 1530. Once you finish the back-off period, you transmit. And of course, that means from client A and client B's perspective, the medium becomes busy during this period. Some signal is being received during that period because someone is transmitting. Client C is unlucky again. It was counting down its back-off period. At this point in time, it was interrupted. Someone started to transmit, therefore the medium became busy before the back-off period completed. So again, it must wait until the medium becomes idle, which will be here. But note, what it does is, this is where we think of that back-off period as a counter counting down. When medium becomes idle again, it's going to repeat the diffs period, and then go into the back-off stage, but it's going to continue counting down from where it left off. Let's work that out. 10 slots. We started at 1410. We were interrupted at time 1530. How many slots did we complete? Started at 1410. interrupted at 1530. Each slot is 20. We finished 6 slots. Good. 6 times 20 is 120. 1410 plus 120 is 1530, which is here. In other words, from when we started our back off, counting down, we're at 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, and then we're interrupted because someone started transmitting. So we actually have 4 slots remaining in our back off period. We will use that in a moment. Let's return to what happens here. We're transmitting our data, finished transmitting. It was transmitting to A. A has received that data. The medium is idle again. No one's transmitting. Repeat the stages. Start the diff period. B still wants to transmit its data. But what about A? After receiving the data, it has to send back an acknowledgement. So it starts the short interframe space period, SIFS, which is shorter than diffs, which means always, if they start at the same time, the station which is needs to run for the short interframe space will always complete first. And when you complete the short interframe space, send the ACK. That transmission of the ACK means the medium is busy again. The red part is where the medium is busy. And we had 50 microseconds for the diffs. The SIFS was 10. Therefore, we do not complete the diffs. We need to fully complete that before we can move on to the next stage. So once again, B is interrupted. Let's just make note of the times. Remember that our data took 1,000 microseconds to transmit. We did the calculation before. So it would go from 1530 up to 1630 here. Short interframe space is 10. 1630 to 1640. It's a 6. ACK time. The time to transmit an ACK, we did an approximation at the start and said that was 100 microseconds. So one that would take us to 1740. Sorry, who's listening? What's wrong? Those numbers are wrong. How long does it take to transmit the data? When did we start transmitting the data? It takes 1,000, not 100 to transmit the data. This is wrong. Should be 2530, not 1630. Sorry. 2530. Changes these values. 1,530 plus 1,000, 2,530 plus another 10 for the short interframe space, 2,540 plus 100 to transmit the ACK, 2,640. So at that time, have we got everything else right? 1,530, 2,530. 2640. At that time, the second piece of data has been successfully delivered from access point back to client A. In the first case, we had data to the access point and now data to client A. Client B still hasn't sent its data. It's still trying. So again, the medium becomes idle. Medium's idle. Do the diffs, that is wait for that period of time, takes us to 2710 because the diffs takes 50 microseconds. In our scenario, there's no one else transmitting now. That is, The others don't have any other data to send at this stage. So, and this is the different thing from what we've seen before. After the dips, we continue the back off from where we left off. We'd already counted down from 10 to 4, so we start, we don't choose another random number, we start, and we've got 4 slots to complete in the back off. So that will take 80 milliseconds. Two, seven, nine, oh. Then we'll transmit. And you can solve the or see the rest. That is, dips, back off, data, sifts, ACK. And that is finished. So there's a slight difference there in that the back off period, if it's interrupted, the next attempt, continue counting down from where we left off. At what time is the ACK finished? What's the final answer, or what's the time at which, I will not draw it, the data is sent to the access point, the access point sends back an ACK, and that is received in total at time what? Someone calculate it? Just complete the diagram in your notes, yeah? Because I cannot add up, that's why. Another mistake. 2640 plus 50, 2690. Thank you. Okay. 2640 here, diffs is 50, 2690. Back off for 4 slots. Because we started and had 10 slots to do, we completed 6 of those 10, we have 4 remaining, so 4 times 20 is 80, 2770, and now we could get the correct answer. Someone will calculate it, I'm sure. Anyone got the answer? At what time is the ACK successfully received? What's the answer? Calculate it. Data transmitted at time 2770. At what time is the received? Anyone answer? What else? Equals, someone was close, 3880. That's correct. Make sure you can complete that and get that number. Data, 2770 plus 1000, 3770, sifs, 3780, ACK, 3880. So, the basic operation is rather simple. you've got four stages. If everything works okay, diffs, back off, transmit, actually five stages, transmit, short interframe space, ACK. So you need to remember that they are the five steps to go through. Except there are exceptions. That is, if we interrupt the diffs because someone else starts transmitting, we have to wait until they stop transmitting. We have to wait until the medium becomes idle again. And then restart, essentially, from the diffs. And the other case is if we interrupt the back off, continue counting down the back off when you restart. Any questions on this? It's important to get it clear. There'll be exam questions on this. We'll go through some more examples in some different scenarios later. Any questions? Let's look at some of the features. So we've really explained how it works, but why does it work such a way, and what does it achieve for us? We've seen, I think, several times this idea of the short interframe space. It's shorter than the other interframe space, DCF interframe space. Means that if two people start this time or their timer at the same time, the one that's waiting for SIFs will always finish their timeout period first. That is, it gives priority to people transmitting ACKs to people transmitting data. That's the idea here. Using a shorter interval gives priority to that station. So the short interframe space gives priority to stations that need to transmit an ACK, as opposed to someone who wants to transmit data and then receive an ACK. What else do we see? The back off. A random period within some range. Why? That's the question. Consider the same scenario from this stage, from what we've started from this afternoon. And if you look at different values of the back off, then it turns out that if we don't have a back off, then we could still have two stations transmitting at the same time. Before we move on and explain this, let's make sure everyone's clear on the current stage. Let's consider this example. I'm not sure if we can draw it. If two stations come out of waiting at the same time, I think we saw this before the lunch break. Two stations had to defer. They both want to transmit data, but they had to defer because someone else, a third station, was transmitting. So this deferral was the time waiting for the medium to become idle. So at this time, the medium becomes idle. So those two stations start checking the medium is idle for the diffs, and they will come out of that diffs or complete that diffs at the same time. So that's why we need this random back off. Because if we didn't have the back off, they would both start transmitting. And that's a problem. So that's why we need a back off in here, because if they both start the diffs at the same time, which is quite likely because they both end deferral at the same time, then they'll both transmit data at the same time. And we don't want that to happen. The idea is that only one transmits at a time. Hence, we need the random backoff. And how does the random backoff help us? Well, because it's random within some range, it's likely that the two stations will choose different random numbers. This one chooses a backoff of 10. This one chooses a backoff of 6. That is, the random number here is 6, the random number here is 10. This one will get to transmit first. This one will have to defer again and then wait. So the station that chooses the smallest number of slots to back off will get to transmit first. So that avoids the collision in this case. Having it random is a way to achieve fairness. Remember, we want to be efficient, avoid collisions, but we want to be fair. When his laptop is transmitting and someone else's wants to transmit, over a long period of time, we want to give them equal access to the medium. We don't want to give his laptop 90% of the chances to transmit and mine only 10%. We'd like to be 50-50 if there's just the two. And the random backoff does that for us. Because even though in this transmit first, the next packet, the next frame, then maybe this station will choose a smaller backoff interval, 3, and this one will choose 13. Therefore, this one will win the race to transmit first. And because it's random, everyone gets equal opportunity. So over a long period of time, each station gets equal opportunity to transmit. Of course, on the individual frame basis, some stations are disadvantaged, like we had here. A got to transmit first, then the access point B had to wait a long time. But if we kept doing this for many other frames, thousands of frames, it would turn out that on average each get about the same opportunity to transmit. That's the fairness coming into it. What else? What can go wrong still? How do we get a collision? How do we get a collision still? First, define collision. What do I mean when I say how do we get a collision? What is a collision? Again? Two stations transfer data at the same time, they will collide at the receiver, if the receiver can receive them. So in our case, simply, if we get two stations transmitting at the same time, that can result in a collision at the receiver. We don't want that to happen, and the MAC protocol is designed such that it should not happen. How does it happen in this case? How does a collision happen? When they have the same random numbers. So in the MAC protocol, if both of them chose the random backoff of 10, both start the backoff at the same time, finish at the same time, both transmit. We will get a collision if they both choose the same random backoff interval. What's the chance of choosing the same random number in this case? One out of... close, on the right track, but wrong. It's not so high. Anyone else? What's the probability? Choose a number between 0 and 31. Inclusive, let's say. Sorry? CW... Mm, What if the connection window was from 0 to 3? 0, 1, 2, 3. What's the chance of a collision? Even simpler. So we're saying it's from 0 to CW. Choose a random number. If we have two stations, the question is, what's the chance that both of them choose the same random number? Let's say CW was 1. So it's 0 to 1. The combinations are station 1, station 2. Station 1 could choose 0. Station 2, 0. Station 1 could choose 1. Station 2, 0. 0, 1, 1, 1. They are the four combinations. If you can choose 0 or 1. This one and this one result in a collision. They're the same numbers. 2 out of 4. What if we went from 0 up to 2, which is 0, 2? Well, station 1 could choose 0, station 2, 0, 1 and 0, 2 and 0. How many collisions, or how many cases cause collision? This one, and this one. 3 out of 9. What happens if we have between 0 and 31? Next one would be, so this is 2 out of 4 cause collision, or half. 3 out of 9 cause collisions. If we have 3 possible values, if we have 4 possible values, we have 4 out of... Four out of how many? 16. 5 values. 5 out of 25. N values. N out of N squared, which is 1 over N. And N is CW in this case. So, the chance of a collision, because they two stations choose the same back-off, is 1 divided by CW, where CW is the maximum value that we can choose for the random interval. Increasing CW, therefore, decreases the chance of a collision. Because if we make CW instead of being 1, collision is 1/2. If we increase it to 2, it's 1/3. If we increase it to 31, the chance is 1 divided by 31, much smaller. Increase it to 1,000, the chance is 1/1,000. So increasing CW decreases the chance of collision. Remember that, because we'll need when we look at another aspect. That only considers two stations. What's the chance of two stations choosing the same random number we've shown here? What if we had 3 stations? If we had 3 computers, a collision occurs if any 2 of them choose the same random number. There's a higher chance now. If I had 10 computers all wanting to transmit at the same time, or all coming out of deferral at the same time, the chance of a collision is the chance that any 2 of them choose the same random number. So that doesn't... So that chance of collision increases. We don't want a collision to occur, therefore we should set CW to be very large. Return to our lectures, or lecture notes. Let's look at what happens if an error does occur. That is, a collision occurs, we do not receive an ACK, what do we do? So after sending a data frame, the station waits for an ACK. If we don't receive an ACK within some time, let's call it the ACK timeout period, then we realize something's gone wrong. So, if we realize something's gone wrong, we're going to retransmit. That's the scheme. It's a retransmission scheme. So let's say we have some ACK timeout period. If we don't receive the ACK within this time, retransmit. And retransmission follows the normal procedure. Diffs, back off, data, sifs, ACK. So retransmission, try again to transmit that same data. Except there's some changes. So once we detect the data was unsuccessfully delivered, then do a diffs, back off. Except the back off, we increase the value of CW. In the first case, CW was 31. With a higher value of CW, we will decrease the chance of collision. If we just had one collision, we say, okay, I don't want that to happen again. So I'll increase CW such that the next time I try, there should be much smaller chance of collision. And the way that we increase CW is we approximately double it. Not exactly. So we go from 31 up to 63. So then when it's 63, the chance of collision is 1 divided by 63, which is much smaller than 1 divided by 31. Other than that, everything's the same. We diffs, back off, data, sifs, ACK, if successful. If another error, we don't receive the ACK again, retry, again increasing CW using the same scheme. If we try too many times, we will give up and tell the application that there was an error. Too many is defined. For example, it may be 7. If we attempt 7 times and still no success, then give up. And when we do that, this is the evolution of that value of CW, the contention window. For the original transmission, let's say it's 31. For the first retry attempt, it's approximately doubled to 63. For the next, doubled again. Retry. We keep increasing CW up until the maximum value. Remember, the maximum was defined as a parameter of the physical layer. In our example, it was 1023. So, I try to send the packet. The first attempt, I will choose a number between 0 and 31, a random number. If no ACK, try again, but choose a random number between 0 and 63. The chance that someone else chooses the same number as me should be less than in this case. Because two people need to choose a number between 0 and 63, and that needs to be the same number. That's much lower than in this case. But if, by chance, we do, I'll have to retransmit again, but now I choose between 0 and 127. And we keep increasing that up to a maximum and keep retrying up to a maximum number of times. If still no ACK, then there's an error in the data transmission. And we report an error to the operating system, which may eventually report an error to the application. So that's the concept of the contention window increasing for retransmissions. If we're successful, CW is set back to 31. So every new frame, every new piece of data, we always start at the original value of CW. It's just for retransmissions that we increase. So now we see where the back-off period is coming into play. Reduce the chance of collisions. There's always a chance of collisions, though. There's still a chance that two people choose the same random number, but it's very low if two people are choosing from 0 to 1023. It's approximately doubled each time. What's the problem of having a large CW? Large contention window. So the good thing of a large contention window is it reduces the chance that two people choose the same random backoff, which reduces the chance of collisions. That's the good thing. What's the bad thing? Waiting time is too long. Remember? We have to wait for that backoff period. So we choose a random number. In this case, it was between 0 and 31. On average, we're going to have to wait, 15 and a half slots. The half average between 0 and 31. If we choose between 0 and 1023, on average, we're going to have to wait 500 slots. On average, because if we do this over many frames, sometimes we'll get a small back-off, 10, sometimes we'll get a large back-off, 1,000. If we do that over many frames, then on average, about 500 slots will have to be the average back-off time. And that means much more time waiting, much less time transmitting real data. Reduces our throughput. And that's why we start at a relatively small value for CW, but as we detect collisions, increase it rapidly. Coming back to our example, in that example of three packets, someone tell me the network throughput. And the number that we came up with at the end was 3880. Microseconds. What's the network throughput for just this very short sample of time of nearly 4 milliseconds? Anyone? What is the rate at which we deliver real data to the destination? Throughput. That's the thing we care about. Of my data rate is 11 megabits per second. I care about how fast do I get my real data to the destination. Does anyone have a value? The rate at which we get real data to the destination. Keep trying to calculate it. What's your, anyone got an answer? Someone's done some calculations. What's your answer? Okay, you can come and do it on the board here. Come up and start writing, and people will help you. No, come on, come on. You don't need her help. Throughput. Write down our equation, or what do we understand as throughput? Or what's the easier? What's the unit for throughput? What are the units that we expect to get? Bits per second, megabits per second, okay. Megabits per second. So the units, megabits per second, suggest bits divided by time. Amount of data divided by time. Throughput, the amount of real data delivered to the destination. How long did it take? So first, how much time did it take to deliver the data? Someone tell him what's the total of time it took in this scenario? Here. So that's on the bottom of your equation. Start writing. So throughput, data, real data divided by time. So you're going to have something divided by time. And the time is 3880 microseconds in our case. Okay, what's on top? How much real data was delivered in that case? Anyone can help him? Micro, not milli. How much real data was delivered? Real data. Useful data. No. How much real data? Not correct. Incorrect. How much real data? Go back to our scenario. I know we don't have it all. Actually, we do have most of it here. How much data was to the destination in this network? 3,000 what? Someone said 3,000. How much real data? All right. Your helpers are not so good at back here. How much data in this frame? One, three, four, 1 bytes in this one. So, all right, he was on the right track, or he's helped us. 3 in this case, 3 by 1, 3, 4, 1 bytes. Convert to bits if we'd like to. We don't have to. That is, it's just the total amount of data inside those frames, excluding headers, excluding ACKs, divided by the total time it took us to deliver that data, which is what? I think, I can't remember. About 8.3 megabits per second in this scenario. What was our data rate? 11 megabits per second. So that shows us how efficient we are in this scenario. All right, this is a very specific case because we only looked at 3 frames. And I chose a specific scenario where, okay, we had to defer and so on. If we looked at thousands of frames, and remember with the random back off, then sometimes client A will get to transmit first, sometimes client B, sometimes the access point. Since it's random, over a large number of frames, a third of the time client A will get to transmit first, a third access point, one third the client B will get equal access. We can work out the approximate average throughput that we could achieve. Or look at individual frames and again work out what the throughput is. So, that leads us to what we did maybe in one of the first or second lectures where we spoke about wireless technologies and we need to share the resources. If our capacity is 11 megabits per second, then in fact we don't get that full capacity because there are overheads. And in wireless LAN, the overheads are the diffs. We're not transmitting here. The back off, we're not transmitting. The header, we're not transmitting useful data. The SIFS, the ACK, not useful data. So that are the overheads in this case. That's why even though our capacity is 11 megabits per second, the network throughput is only just 8.2 megabits per second in this case. In larger scenario, it may be different than 8.2. That's just one specific case. So first, we do not get the full capacity because we have overheads. Even worse, if we have collisions, we'll have to retransmit and our throughput will go down even further. That capacity or that throughput must be shared amongst each of the stations. If we do this for many frames and keep drawing it for thousands of frames, we'll see that one third of the time A is transmitting its data or performing the procedure for transmitting its data, one third of the time it's access point, one third it's B. That is, only one is transmitting at a time. There's never any case where two are transmitting data successfully at the same time. If they do, there'll be a collision. So a per station throughput over a long period would be, with the three stations, one third of what the network throughput is. We'll call this the network or total throughput. But per station, it needs to be divided by each station. And that's why if we have our 10 computers in this wireless LAN, a 54 megabit per second data rate, divide that, or take into account overheads, and maybe it's down to 27 megabits per second, divide that by 10 users, and my computer only gets the 2 or 3 megabits per second. So on an individual user's perspective, we have to divide that network throughput by the number of users in that network, which is much different than Ethernet, a wired network, where you get very close to the full 100 megabits per second, maybe 90 megabits per second. So that's where we see the performance limitations of wireless LAN coming in. I think we've covered this, why the contention window grows. Let's cover one more thing and then we'll spend some time about the assignment. We have a problem. We saw collisions can occur if two stations choose the same backoff interval. We can reduce that probability of collision by increasing CW. So there's a way around that. We cannot always guarantee no collisions, but we can reduce the chance of them. But up until now, we've assumed that if A is transmitting, both the access point and the other client B can detect that A is transmitting. That is, they both know the medium is busy. We can have a situation where that doesn't happen. That's shown here. Here's our access point, and here are our two clients, A and B. And this shows the approximate or the transmission range of each. Let's say the access point is in the middle of the room, client's on one side, a client A is on one corner, and client B is on the far corner. Both, in this case, both A and the access point are within range of each other. They can communicate. That is, if we see the range of client A is here, so access point is within the range of A. They can communicate. So, similar, if that client A is transmitting, access point knows it's transmitting. It can receive the signal. Similar, client B is within range of the access point. So they know when each other is transmitting. But client A and B are outside of each other's range in this case. Let's say if the range was 10 meters, we have in this corner client A, 7 meters away, we have the access point in the middle, they are within range of 10 meters. Another 7 meters away, client B, which is within range of the access point, but A and B are outside of range. They are 14 meters away, and the range is only 10 meters. So when A is transmitting its signal, access point can hear it, but B cannot. And that means when A is transmitting, B does not know that the medium is busy. Because the only way you know the medium is busy if you hear the signals from the transmitter. If you're too far away, you will not hear those signals. It will be too weak to recognize. So in this case, where we say these two stations are hidden from each other, hidden stations or hidden terminals, this is a problem. Because see what happens. A starts, the diffs back off, starts to transmit data. No one else was transmitting. Sometime later, B starts to transmit, does a back off. During the back off, A is transmitting. It's transmitting to the access point. B does not receive that transmission. It's too far away. So it doesn't know anyone else is transmitting. It thinks the medium is idle. So it continues the back off and starts transmitting its data frame. So that's transmitting to the access point at this point in time. Of course, that's a collision at the access point. And when a collision occurs at the access point cannot understand anything and therefore cannot send back an ACK, an acknowledgement, because it doesn't know who transmitted to it. These two will time out and we'll have to repeat the process. Diffs back off because we increase CW, so there's a chance we get a larger back off, a longer waiting time. May happen that they again transmit at the same time, causing a collision. Repeat, maybe we're successful the next time. This is a very bad case because we have collisions, retransmissions, takes a long time to transmit one data frame successfully to the destination. And this is due to these two stations, A and B, from being hidden from each other. Any questions so far on this? Yeah? Again?
You said that, okay, the AP cannot listen to either of
them. From the access point's perspective, at this point in time, it's receiving a signal. Everything's okay. It's receiving and it's from A. And then it starts receiving an additional signal. And two signals being received at the same time essentially add on to each other. And from the access point's perspective, it cannot be decoded into what that signal means. So it doesn't know what the actual data is, what the correct sequence of zeros and ones are. So if any two are transmitting in the same period of time, so any two transmissions overlap, in theory, let's say they overlap by just a single bit, then we consider both of those frames as colliding and lost. The access point does not understand. If the access point doesn't understand what it just received, it will not send an ACK because it doesn't know who to ACK to or what to acknowledge. It cannot ACK. Since A and B do not receive an ACK, they'll time out and retry. It may be that we'll have a second collision on the retry and we'd have to retry again. It depends on the particular lengths and the timing here. Collisions are bad. In a hidden station or hidden terminal scenario, they are highly likely to occur. Before, when we looked at the back off, we could reduce the chance of collisions by increasing the CW. In this case, it doesn't help, or not as much. Here, the collisions are not because they choose the same back off. They can choose different back off intervals. It's because they cannot hear each other. They do not know that the other one is transmitting because they're so far away. We need some way to resolve this. To resolve it, let's look at how can we decrease the chance two transmit at the same time?
Well,
decrease the we want to decrease the chance that when two stations are hidden from each other, that they transmit such that the two data frames overlap in time. See, that's where the problem is. A collision occurs if A and B are hidden from each other, and they start transmissions such that the two frames arrive at the access point overlapping in time. Let's see what the impact of the length of the frame has on that. Let's ignore the diffs and back off. We'll not draw them, but let's just draw the data frames being transmitted by two hidden stations, let's say A and B. Let's say at time, let's put numbers to it, at time 4,000, A started transmitting, and let's give it a total time to transmit that data frame of 1,000, just to put some example numbers here. At what time if B starts transmitting, at what time will that cause a collision to occur with the transmission from data frame of A? So, assuming the same length data, if we start transmitting at time 3,500. Take an example. Finish at 4,500. There's a collision because they overlap in time. That is, at the receiver, the access point, during this period of time, it would be receiving two transmissions at the same time. That's a collision. Okay, what if we started transmitting a bit later, 3,500? At, say, 3,999 with 4,999, of course that's a collision because there's all this period of time where that two are transmitting at the same time. From the receiver's perspective, it cannot decode either of them. What about if we started at time 3,001 and finished at 4,001? Also a collision, because let's say that there's 1 microsecond here, two stations from the receiver's perspective are transmitting at the same time. If we started at 2,999, there would be no collision, because station B would finish before station A started. So the chance of collision in this case depends upon the chance that two stations want to transmit data within some period of time such that those two frames overlap. We cannot control when stations want to transmit data. That's the problem. When does my laptop want to transmit? The MAC protocol cannot control that. That depends on what the user is doing there. We cannot control when the user on this computer wants to transmit data. If they're transferring a file, maybe they want to always transmit data. That's out of the control of the MAC protocol. We cannot influence that. So the other thing, or the only thing that we can control, is what is the size of these frames. These frames were large. They took 1,000 microseconds to transmit. Let's say we had smaller frames, which just took 10 to transmit. We start at 4,000, finish at 4,010. If B times 3,000, is there a collision in this case? Again, B is transmitting just a small frame. Is there a collision? No. In this case, with large frames, yes. If B starts at 3,000, A starts at 4,000, there is a collision. In this case, if we start at 3,000 and 4,000 because we have much smaller frames, there's no collision. Okay, what about 3,500? No collision again. There is a collision if we start just before and we overlap, let's say 3,991, finish at 4,001. So, with longer frames, there's more chance of a collision because of two frames being transmitted at the same time than with shorter frames. So to overcome or to reduce the chance of collisions when we have hidden terminals, what we want to do is use shorter frames, because that will reduce the chance that two frames will overlap at the same time. So the scheme to do that is called RTS-CTS. Request to send, clear to send. We'll go through and describe the scheme and return to some of the explanation. Actually, this will describe. This is the normal mode. Two stations hidden from each other. If we have a large amount of data, then we only need a small overlap in time to have a collision. The larger the data, the larger the chance that we'll overlap in time and cause a collision. So, if we use smaller frames, we reduce the chance of collision. And the RTS-CTS scheme introduces two small frames at the start called request-to-send frames, RTS. Because they're very small frames, it will reduce the chance that an RTS from A will with an RTS from B. That's the first concept that we introduce with RTS-CTS. We don't show RTS B because it doesn't collide. The next thing we introduce is that once a station receives a request to send, it sends back a special clear-to-send frame, CTS. And then we transmit the data. So the next feature this introduces is that with hidden terminals, we send a request to send to the access point. When the access point receives that, it sends back a clear to send. B hears this clear to send because B is within range of the access point, but not the client A. When B hears this clear to send, that clear to send has some data or some information in it which tells B someone else is about to transmit data. In terminals was that if A was transmitting to the access point, B didn't know it. That's the problem. Therefore, B transmits. We overcome that problem by sending a short message to the access point saying, I'm about to send some data. Access point says, you're clear to send. When sending that clear to send, B hears that. Or we can say B overhears this clear to send and recognises, someone else is about to send data. Let's assume the medium is busy. Let's defer and let them transmit. They transmit their data using the normal scheme of data and ACK, and then B will try to transmit its data. So we introduce these two new packets. The advantages are that the clear-to-send can be used to inform stations which are hidden from the original source that a transmission is about to take place. We reduce the chance of collisions by using smaller packets on the initial transmission. The RTS is usually much smaller than a typical data frame. And we tried to explain the concept with smaller frames here. There's much less chance of collision than with larger frames. That's a little bit more complex than the basic access. We'll see the scheme once we go through it is not much different from basic access except for these two new frames, RTS-CTS. But I think that's a time to stop and give us some time to talk about the assignment. On next lecture, we'll go through the details of the RTS-CTS scheme, give an example like we did for basic access, and summarise on the difference between basic access the scheme we went through in detail today and this new mode of operation, RTS-CTS.